Hebrews chapter 13 this morning. Hebrews chapter 13. And we'll read the first three verses. And it says this: keep on loving each other as brothers. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those in prison as if you were their fellow prisoners, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. So we've been talking about the life of faith, and Hebrews has been focusing on that. And he's now kind of saying this is what the life of faith does. This is how it looks. And one of the focuses here is that living a life of faith is living a life of love. So here we have people who are facing persecution. They're suffering. They're going through hardship. And some are being even losing their property, losing all their belongings. And some are being thrown into prison. And we have this situation, and the solution is not to get up and move and go somewhere else. The solution he's focused on here is the love of the brothers, the love of the family of God. Loving one another is what we need when the world is against us. Having the community of faith united together in love is where strength comes from. And so you see him focusing on this because they had, this happens through history. In fact, it's even happening in the world today. You see in the newspapers all over the world, there are Christians who are being killed, martyred, and you have others that are being persecuted. And even in our own society, Christianity of the born-again type has detractors and critics. And so we find that in the early church, when things became difficult, when things became hard, they united together. And there's something that I think is very beautiful about that. You know, we can have all kinds of disagreements and conflicts and offenses and hurts when it comes to people coming together, Christian or not. When you come together, there's always that potential. And you have this denomination, you have that denomination, and this group of people and that group of people. But when there's persecution, guess what? Those things don't seem that important. And what comes to be important is that we love the Lord and we love one another. And people unite and come together and support each other. So you see that. Now, here's an interesting illustration of the early church. I was reading a book here or an article on the rise of Christianity. It's written by Rodney Stark. And he talks about, and he gives an illustration of what the early church was like in the first few centuries and why it grew so quickly. And he attributes it to this hospitality, this loving of others, loving of fellow believers, and loving those who are outside of the faith. And he goes and says, here's what he describes as what became the dominant force of the Roman Empire in such a short time. He says, he presents factors that would have contributed to this great movement toward Christ. And he shows that there were two great epidemics during those first few centuries. If those who were affected were cared for, there was a good chance they would survive. But often, when a member of the family contracted the disease, the other family members left that person uncared for and left their homes for places not affected by the disease. The Christians, however, did not do this. The Christians cared for their own family members and also cared for those who were left behind by their family members. Stark points out, this is the author, that the willingness of to suffer in order to care for the sick had a part to play in large numbers of people in the Roman Empire turning to Christ. So you see the self-sacrificing love for their own members, own part of the body of Christ, and then you see the self-sacrificing love that's even reaching out to those who are not of the community. And this kind of love kind of just pierced right through all the objections they might have had to Christians and all the little things that they found offensive. This kind of won them over. Love won them over. So when the world is against us, we practice brotherly love. Romans 13:8 says this, "Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law." Now, the reasons for practicing brotherly love, I had three things here I wanted to focus on briefly. And the first one, the reason why we practice brotherly love is because we are loved. A few verses here. John 13 and verse 34. He says, "A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another." Now, implied in this whole thing is that the reason that you love is because you have been loved. And because you have been loved, you're to also practice that same love toward others. And here in 1 John chapter 4, verses 9 and 11, it says this, "This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him." Verse 11, "And dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another." Now, here's one of my favorite verses. The first part of it I want to just quote is 1 John chapter 3 and verse 1. It says, "How great is the love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are." I really like that song that we sing, you know, that Chris Tomlin has sung. Now my mind goes blank. Golly, this is so typical. Okay, malfunction. Here we go. which talks about that is who we are. We're loved by you, loved by you. Yeah. Yes, that's good. So the fact is that we don't have love in ourselves. Have you noticed that? I just don't have it sometimes. It's just not there. And I need a source. I need the source of love working in my life. And how does that happen? Do you just kind of gin yourself up and say, "I'm going to love people today. I'm really going to"? No, it doesn't work that way. We focus on something else, something outside of ourselves, and something that's working within us. And that's the love of Christ. When we see his love, his sacrifice, and how much he cares for us, and that God has reached out to us and brought us into his family, brought us into his home, and he's lavished. That word lavished means over the top love for us. And that's who we are, ones who are loved greatly. And when that starts to sink in, it gives you freedom to love others. And so it's because we are loved that we do love. He is the source of our love. He's the power that enables us to love. And so we focus on that when we are feeling attacked or feeling criticized, we're feeling isolated or not a part. We focus on the one who always will welcome us, always receive us, always love us, no matter, even if we reject ourselves, he will not reject us. And let that soothe and minister to your heart so that you're free to be able to go out and to love. Now, here's another thing that's a truth, and it's because we love because we are children of God. We're children of God. Again, 1 John 4, verses 7 and 8 says, "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God." That's that coming from God again. And everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. So the fact is here, he's saying that the truth is that you are children of God, and we know that because you love one another. It's one of the characteristics of the family. It's a characteristic of God, because God is loving, his children also love. You know, there are certain characteristics of our children, and guess what? They got it from us. And they're so appreciative. They thank us every day, you know. I know in our family there's certain things that my brothers, we do, and we're not even aware of it. But when the family gets together, all the wives go, yeah, that's the Keskis. That's their humor. That's their laugh. You know, there's certain things that are just characteristic that we have in common. And so when we are born again, when we're born of God and we've come from the family of God, we've become a part of him, we have those family traits that need to be seen. And they need to come out. And one of them here is loving one another. So it's one of the family traits of God's family is that they love one another. Another one here, because we love God. Again, 1 John 4:8 says this, whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. Because we know God, we have to love. Being exposed to him, influenced by him, generates and produces love in us. And so because we love God, responding to his love enables us to love others. Okay, so living a life of faith is living a life of love, and it includes being a lover of strangers, being a lover of strangers. Now, the point of this here, he starts off with brotherly love, starts with the family of God, the people of God, and loving one another, but he doesn't leave it there. In fact, he moves on and says, do not forget to entertain strangers. In other words, there's an outward focus that comes in. And this is not just something that we put down on our to-do list. This is a way of looking at life that he's talking about here. You have an attitude and a perspective on people who are not believers, those who are not close to you, those that you don't know well. They're supposed to be typical of the family of God, as they invite people in. They welcome people in, into their lives, into their homes, into their spheres of influence. They welcome people. Strangers are people who aren't like us. They may be from a different culture, maybe a different race, or have a different likes and dislikes. And what is typical of human beings is that we focus on our differences and allow those things to separate us, right? I don't particularly care for baseball, so I'm not going to hang out with people who like baseball. I just don't care for it, so I'm just not going to do it. Or I don't like to go for long walks. I'd rather, you know, you can just name 100,000 different things. They like a certain kind of humor. They're very quiet. They're always talking. They're this or that. You know, there's all kinds of differences that we have. And if we focus on the differences, we find ourselves going, I don't think that's a real good trait of theirs. I don't really think that's a good thing. And that's, I don't really care for it. Well, all it does is make us little islands. And what God is saying to us through this is that we don't use our differences to isolate us. We intend to bring people who are different into our lives, into our sphere, so that it's not all about us. It's not all about what we want, not all about what we like. It's not all about our preferences. So you see this in the early church, that they reached out to those who were not of their community. And here the word to entertain stranger is a lot of times translated hospitality. Now, what do you, when you think of hospitality, what do you think? Ladies probably think of having the table set right and the house is clean, right? And there's a wonderful meal that's perfect and all set up and everybody's just, you know, it's all well ordered and everything just runs smoothly and you entertain. That's not what we're talking about here. It's not entertaining in that way. The word, have you heard the word xenophobic? Xenophobic is which it means that a fear of those who are different, to fear those who are outside, to fear those who are not in your circle, to fear those who aren't like you. And the word that's used here for entertaining strangers is the word philoxenon, which means the exact opposite of xenophobia. Instead of a fear of strangers, it's a love of strangers. So it means to love those who are strangers to you so that they are welcomed in, they're sought, they're pursued. You go after those. Now, I know that sometimes it's almost like you'd say, they need to make the first step. I want them to seek me. I want them to invite me. I want them to want to get to know me. So I'll just sit here, and I'm going to smile, and then they're just going to come over here. And yeah, it doesn't work that way. I remember years ago talking to a few people, and they said, yeah, I came to this church, and no one's friendly. No one invited me to do anything. No one came and talked to me. And I said, so why didn't you go talk to them? Why didn't you go invite them? Well, it doesn't work that way. It's supposed to be there be first. See, a person who's of the mind of welcoming strangers, entertaining strangers, that's what they do first, whether they are the ones who are new or not new. They don't want to have anyone to be a stranger. So how many of you are naturally gifted that way? Okay, got a couple. And I have found over the years, when I talk to people, the majority of people aren't. It's something that they have to work at. Now, there's some good things that we can get out of this that I'm going to bring up here in a minute, but the fact is that he tells people who are going through hard times, through difficult situations, who are facing persecutions and facing suffering, that this is one of the things that they need to do. Not look at themselves, but to look outside and look for people who are not a part, who are not welcomed, who are marginalized maybe, and seek them out and open their homes to them, open their life to them. Now, being hospitable is a part of the life of faith. It's an attitude of heart. It seeks to turn strangers into friends, into family, takes these strangers and makes them guests, and eventually brothers and sisters in the Lord. So it's an attitude of heart that goes after new people and makes them feel welcome, makes them feel comfortable, and especially goes after people that others exclude and don't notice and aren't welcomed by most people. So it says here, in so doing, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. Now, wouldn't that be interesting? There's somebody sitting in the corner and nobody ever goes to them, and you say, well, I got to do what the pastor says today. I'm going to go greet them and welcome them and maybe invite them for lunch today. And you go over there and talk with them. And as you're talking to them and you had lunch with them, a few minutes later, they disappear. And you go, whoa, I wonder if it was an angel. That'd be really interesting if you reaching out to somebody and you found out that that was a person that God had sent to you for you to meet. You find here this situation where it's talking about angels is a specific situation that is in the Old Testament. And it's the man of faith, Abraham. And if you remember in Genesis 18, Abraham sees some strangers coming and walking down the road, and he goes out to them. In other words, he doesn't go back in his tent and shut the tent up. He actually goes out, and he greets them and invites them to come into his tent. Then he has his wife fix a meal for them. All along, he doesn't really know who these are, who these people are. Come to find out, it's a theophany, it's a theophany, which is an appearance of Jesus in the Old Testament, and two angels with him. And he's going to examine the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. And he has a conversation with Abraham. And so God comes into his life on a personal basis in a way that he had never really experienced like this before, all because he was being hospitable. He was greeting and welcoming strangers. So the principle there, from the very first part of the Bible, you see that this is kind of something that God values, is that we reach out to those who are not like us, who are strangers. And it's because God is a lover of strangers. God is a lover of strangers. Now, the people that God reached out to who were strangers were the Jews. The Jews were outsiders. When they came to Egypt, they were welcome at first, but then eventually they were pushed out and were seen as a threat. They were seen as different. The customs that they have were offensive to many of the Egyptians. And so eventually it came to a place where the Jews were oppressed, and they were not really welcome there other than to be manual labor for the people of Egypt. And to these people, they cried out to God. And God took and came down and took those who were estranged and outsiders and said to them, you know, you don't know me. In fact, you didn't even know my name. I had to give my name to Moses so he could tell you who I was. I am that I am. And I'm going to take an interest in you. I'm going to take you out of that horrible, miserable place that you're in, homeless, without much support, suffering, and hardship. And I'm going to take you out of there, and I'm going to bring you to a home that I'm preparing for you. And I'm going to feed you, and I'm going to take care of you. And eventually, when we get to the other side, I'm going to invite you to be my people. He reached out. That's how God is. That's a quality of his grace, is reaching out. So we're in the same position as those Jews were many, many hundreds of years ago. We were outsiders. We were strangers to God. We were estranged from God. Here's an interesting verse. Write this down. Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. It says this. Therefore, remember that formerly you who are Gentiles by birth and called uncircumcised by those who are called them, who call themselves the circumcision. Remember that at the time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. So Paul writing says, this is who you are. You are strangers, and God has reached out to you. He's reached out to you. He's reached out to me. He's brought those who were his enemies and made them his friends. He's made those who were without any interest in him, he brought them in, and eventually they became family. to him. You see that principle there? See, it's God's grace that is a kind of a way of expression, is hospitality. God reaching out to us. God welcomes sinners. He welcomes his enemies. And because he does this and works in their life and brings them near, he wants us to be like him, to make that a practice where we bring in people who are not like us. And hospitality is generous. It's gracious. It's welcoming. Now, I don't know about you, but I think it's very easy to isolate and to separate yourself from other people. It's easy to not reach out to people. It's easy not to welcome people. But as a Christian, that goes against what I'm supposed to be. It goes against even the spiritual life that God has given you, because what's characteristic of the life that God has given us is that it's a welcoming and generous spirit, is what is his spirit. So an author puts it this way: it will free you from the gravity of selfishness. It'll free you from the gravity of selfishness. I'll just read this a little bit here. It says, the physical force of gravity pulls everything to the center of the earth. In order to break free from the earth-centered life, thousands and thousands of pounds of energy have to push the space shuttle away from the center. There is also a psychological force of gravity that constantly pulls our thoughts and affections and physical actions inward toward the center of our own selves and our own homes. Therefore, the most natural thing in the world is to neglect hospitality. It is the path of least resistance. All we have to do is yield to the natural gravity of our self-centered life, and the result will be a life so full of self that there is no room for hospitality. We will forget about it, and we will neglect it. So the Bible bluntly says, stop. Build a launching pad, fill up your boosters, and blast out of your self-oriented routine. Stop neglecting hospitality and start practicing. Here's another statement he makes. Therefore, when we practice hospitality, here's what happens. We experience the refreshing joy of becoming God's conduits of hospitality rather than being self-decaying cul-de-sacs. The joy of receiving God's hospitality decays and dies if it doesn't flourish in our own hospitality to others. So, practicing hospitality. Here's some practical examples I want to just run through briefly. Invite people in your neighborhood into your home. Now, I think our culture isn't such that people don't interact with their neighbors anymore. Have you noticed that kind of, I think I saw them. Yep, there they go in the garage. Okay, that was it. And, oh, I think they're coming out of the garage now. Okay, there they go. And that's about it. It takes a little more effort to kind of go over and maybe knock on the door, or I'm not saying hang in the front yard and just stare at the front door and be creepy, but somehow, you know, you take the first step and reach out and invite them into your life. Try to figure out what are they interested in, what are their interests, what do they like just by what they have in their garage. Well, I'm not saying to go snoop in the garage either, but you know, you could see signs everywhere what they might be interested in, what they talk about, or hey, they have kids or they don't have kids, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And from that, do something that they might be interested with them. invite them to join you and just start that relationship and let them become closer. Welcome them into your life. And it's interesting how just a little things like that, people start to see you as friends. They see you in a positive light, and they start watching you. And they see something about you that's different, hopefully. If the Spirit of Christ dwells within you and you're hospitable, there's going to be something of the Lord coming through, because that's what he's like. He's hospitable. He's welcoming. Can you imagine if you here you are, first day in heaven, and there you are walking through the gate, and Jesus is talking to some people over here, and there are people over here talking to Peter, and nobody comes and says, "I," and you're ostracized. You just feel like a stranger in heaven. You think that could possibly be? No. What is it going to be like? Jesus is going to be seeking you out. Other people will be seeking. There'll be this connection right away. There'll be this welcoming, this fellowship. And there's something God-like about that. There's something life-giving about that. And so when we practice hospitality, that's what we're doing, is we're doing something God-like. Invite people to coffee, or if you don't drink coffee, tea, or whatever you drink, or whatever you snack on, whatever. Invite them to come. You know, you see somebody that you say, you know, I need to get to know this person a little bit. Maybe I'll just invite them out for coffee, and we'll just talk for a few minutes. It doesn't have to be long. Or maybe there's some other person seems to be discouraged, and just offer to listen. Do something with them and just listen to them, what they have to say. In other words, reach out and offer a welcome to them into your life. Here's another thing. Host a small group in your home. That is a great thing. You know, we need to grow together. And one of the best places for people to grow as Christians is with other Christians. And just saying, you know what, I'm going to invite some people into my home, and we're going to get to know each other a little bit, and then, you know what, I think we'll say, what do we want to grow in together? And start growing together, studying some material, studying the Bible, studying some Bible study material. If you need help with that, I'd be happy to give you all kinds of recommendations. But, you know, start inviting people into your home, where you live, and grow together with them. Invite people into your spiritual home. Again, invite people to a small group, or invite people to church. Or another thing I think is good, we do this every year. We have a Love Stockton where we go out into the community and do some projects of love. Invite your neighbors to join you. You know, come and join us. We're gonna dig up weeds together or whatever, you know. Just invite them to do a project together. Just something to try to break down the wall and have an excuse to get together and to meet with other people. Hospitality, living the life of love, is that you're putting yourself in the shoes of those that are different, where it talks about that here at the beginning. It says, remember those in prison and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. Jesus taught us to do this. When people in that this writer is writing to in the book of Hebrews, when they were standing up for their faith, many of them found themselves losing everything. Their property was confiscated. In chapter 10, it mentions someone whose home and all their belongings were confiscated. Others were thrown into prison because of their faith. And what the writer is saying here, don't forget them. Remember them. Because in prison, in those days, it was a lot different than it is today, in that you had to have people from the outside come in and help you with food. The prison didn't provide it. It's relatives that provided. It was friends that provided. It was people that you knew that provided, or change of clothes, or anything that you might need came from the outside. And so he's saying, don't forget them. They're there for because they have identified with Christ and that they're thrown into prison. They're part of you. Don't forget and neglect them. Visit them. Now, here's an interesting thing that Jesus said in chapter 25 of the book of Matthew, verses 37 and 40. It says, then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did it to me. So, when you're looking at that stranger, it might be an angel that you not know, or it might be, in a metaphorical sense, Jesus. Jesus says, when you do it to the least of these, you do it to me. Do it because you're doing it to Jesus. You're inviting this person in because you're wanting to invite Jesus into your life, into your home. Practice hospitality to Jesus. You see this all through the scriptures. Hebrews chapter 13, again, in verse 5, has at the end there talking about that God will be with you. Through all these things that he's talking about for them to do, and there's some other things we will talk about next week, but the things that he's talking, he says, I'm going to be with you as you seek to follow me in these areas of your life. As you start to practice this life of faith, I'll be with you. And it's interesting, in many of the versions, it says, I will never leave you or forsake you. And that's all it says. But in the Greek, it's much more emphatic. It's much stronger. And it says it like this. Here's the Amplified Bible. And I think it gives a good rendering of this. It says, for he, God himself, has said, I will not in any way fail you, nor give you up, nor leave you without support. I will not, I will not, I will not in any degree leave you helpless, nor forsake you, nor let you down, relax my hold on you, assuredly not. Anybody have any questions now about is Jesus with you? He's saying when you do these things, you're not on your own. I'll be with you. I won't forsake you. I'll be there to help you. I'll support you because this is what I do, and I want you to do the same. Okay, we're going to have a water baptism, as you can see over here this morning. And so I'm going to have those who are going to be baptized to go now and go to change. There's the ladies' bathroom back there. You can go do that. And the rest of us are going to stand, and we're going to sing together. So if you all stand. Whoop. That was your cue. And those who are being baptized, if you would go and change your clothes. And then we'll come back and we'll do the...